So we can see that result and consciousness, types of result and consciousness are caused by karma. So they have cause. But the other types of consciousness, wholesome consciousness, unwholesome consciousness, and functional consciousness, have no cause. They are not caused by karma. But both those that are caused by karma and that are not caused by karma need some conditions for their arising. Without the conditions, no consciousness can arise. And these conditions are the objects and senses, the coming together of meeting of objects and senses. These are the conditions for consciousness to arise. Even though some of the types of consciousness are caused by karma, they still need these conditions in this life to arise. In one of the suttas, in Samyukta Nikaya, Buddha said, depending on the eye as support or as a basis, and visible data as object, arises eye consciousness. Owing to the coming together of the three, arises contact. And depending on contact, feeling arises, and so on. So in this sutta, Buddha taught us about the conditions for consciousness to arise. So eye consciousness arises depending on the eye and the visible data, or the visible object. So for the eye consciousness or seeing consciousness to arise, we need the eye as a basis, physical basis for its arising, and an object. Because the definition of citta, you will remember, is that which is aware of an object. So without the object, there can be no consciousness at all. So consciousness needs an object to hang on to, actually. So these are the two conditions required for the arising of consciousness. The eye, here eye consciousness, the eye and the object which is seen or which is to be seen. Owing to the coming together of the three, that is, the eye, visible data or the visible object, and eye consciousness. Owing to the coming together of the three, or the arising of the three, there arises contact. Now, it is important, because in the Pali text, the word used is just sangati. Sangati can mean just the coming together, not owing to the coming together. So the commentaries interpreted it as meaning owing to the coming together. So not just the just coming together is contact, but contact is the result of the coming together of the three, the senses, the object, and consciousness. I think it is like when you put two electric wires together, there's a spark. The spark arises when these two wires come together. So the spark is the result of the touching of two wires. But as soon as the wires are touched, the spark arises. Not just the touching is a spark, but the spark is a different thing which comes out of the contact of two wires. So in the same way, the contact or pasa is the outcome of the coming together of the three. Here, the eye, the visible object, and eye consciousness. So, the condition for eye consciousness to arise is the eye and the visible object. Then, condition for ear consciousness is the ear and audible object or sound, and the condition for nose consciousness is the the nose sensitivity and smell and so on. And in the Visuddhimagga, the path of purification also, this same idea is stated. The pentad that has contact as the fifth arises not from the eye or from things seen or something that is in between. Due to the conditions, it comes to be and forms as well, just as the sound that arises from a beaten drum. The pentad that has contact as the fifth simply means contact, feeling, perception, volition, and consciousness, cheta. So for our understanding here, we can just say the cheta arises not from the eye, that means not from the eye alone, and not from things seen alone, because there are always visible things in the world, but we do not have eye consciousness always. Only when we see, or only when the visible object comes into the avenue of the eye, do we have this eye consciousness. Due to conditions, it comes to be. Or not something that is in between. So the condition is not something that is in between the eye and the visible thing. Or maybe it may mean apart from the eye and the visible things. Due to conditions, it comes to be and formed as well. So it comes to be, it arises due to the conditions. And since it arises due to conditions, it is called formed, that is Pali Sankhara or Sankhata. Just as the sound that arises from a beaten drum. So there is no sound in the drum or in the, let us say, stick. But when the drum is beaten, the sound arises. So in the same way, consciousness arises from the coming together of the senses and the objects. And there is another statement often quoted in Buddhist books, and that is from a small treatise called Satyasankhepa. It may be very difficult to get hold of this book in the West. It is a treatise on some topics of Abhidhamma, and it is written in verses. But it is not as popular as the Abhidhammatasangaha. In it is said, just as on the coming together of a sun crystal, fuel, and the sun's rays, fire, though non-existent previously, comes into being. So does consciousness on the coming together of bases and objects, etc. So they didn't have magnifying glasses in those times. So they just say in Pali, mani. So mani can be translated as ruby or glass or whatever. So for our purpose, we can say coming together of a magnifying glass, fuel or something to burn, and sun's rays, fire comes into being. So fire is not existent, not previously existent in the fuel or in the rays of the sun or in the glass, in the magnifying glass. But when these three come together, then fire comes into being. In the same way, consciousness comes into being when bases or senses and objects meet together. So the conditions for cheta to arise is the objects and the senses. Without the objects and the senses, no consciousness can arise. So we can say, although not every type of consciousness is caused by karma, yet every consciousness needs some conditions to arise. In fact, there are more conditions than just objects and senses. Because although there is a visible object and we have eyes, if there is no light, we cannot, the eye consciousness cannot arise. And if we do not pay attention, really, the consciousness may not arise. So attention and light is also conditions for eye consciousness to arise. But the more important conditions are the objects and senses. And the objects are divided into six kinds in Abhidhamma. Objects are those on which subject or chetas and chetasikas hangs on. That is, for the chetas and chetasikas to hang on to or adheres to. Or those in which subject delights. Now this is the meaning of the Pali word. The Pali words are written on the blackboard. Now objects are called in Pali alambana or aramana. There are two words meaning the same thing, objects. The first one, alambana, means something to hang on to. And it is often compared to a staff. So when you are old and you cannot walk well, you have to lean on the staff. In the same way, consciousness and jhetasikas lean on to the objects. Or it is compared to a line for people to hold on to when they walk. So in that sense, the word is alambana. And there's another word, aramana. And in this word, the root is ram, R-A-M, which means to delight. So aramana means something in which cheta takes delight. Because cheta must always have an object, and without an object, cheta cannot arise or cheta cannot exist. So cheta is said to take delight in objects. So objects are those which mind hangs on to or which mind delights in. And the objects are divided into six kinds in Abhidhamma. The first five are not difficult to understand. That is the visible object, and that is often translated as form or color. And the second, audible object, sound, voice. And the third, odorous object, the smell. And fourth, sensitive object, that is taste. And the fifth, tangible object, that is touch. And the sixth kind of object is called Dhamma object. Here also, Dhamma cannot be translated. Those that are not included in the first five are all included in the sixth Dhamma object. So Dhamma can mean many things here. And the Dhamma objects here comprise of the following six kinds. So the first one is sensitive material qualities. There are five of them. If you look at the list of material qualities of last lecture, you will see there are eye sensitivity, ear sensitivity, and so on. These five sensitive materials are called Dhamma objects. And then number two, subtle material qualities. Now subtle material qualities are the do you have the notes of last lecture? No. Please look at that list. So subtle material qualities, there are 16 of them, are water element. And then down the list you go to femininity, masculinity, and so on. So they are called subtle material qualities. And the others are called, say, gross material qualities. That means the other five are not difficult to perceive, but these are more difficult to perceive. So they are called subtle material qualities, and they are called Dhamma objects. And then cetas, cetasikas, nibbanas, and concept, manyati. Concept means thing concept and name concept we studied in the second lecture. So these six are all collectively called Dhamma objects. Cetta can be the object of another cetta. That's right. And that is more evident when you practice meditation and be mindful of your thoughts. Okay, one cetta is the object of the another cetta. So cetta and cetasikas can both be objects and then those that take object. So there are these six kinds of objects taught in Abhidhamma. And then the senses. These senses are often called doors in Abhidhamma. They are doors, like doors through which people enter a building. So these sensitivity and others, these senses are called doors because they are those through which objects gain entrance into the mind. That is figuratively speaking, the objects do not come and go through our eyes or ears or whatever, but say they gain entrance through these doors into our mind, or more correctly, they are those through which consciousness arises. So, seeing consciousness arises through the eye sensitivity. Hearing consciousness arises through the ear sensitivity, and so on. So these sensitive parts of the eyes and so on are called doors. And eye door means just eye sensitivity. That is these five, the first of the five sensitive materials in the list of 28 material qualities. So ear door means the ear sensitivity, something in the ear. Nose door is a nose sensitivity. Tongue door, tongue sensitivity, or taste buds. And body door means body sensitivity, which exists throughout the body. But here, they are objects of mind, because they are included in the Dhamma objects, right? So they can be the objects of mind. And here they are treated as doors through which consciousness arises. They are material properties. Number six is mind door. And mind door means bhavangas. I will explain it later when we come to the diagram of the thought process. So there are six senses in Buddhism. Not five. And the sixth sense is mind. Not like some intuition or something popularly known. So these are the six senses or six doors through which consciousness arises. And when these objects and these doors come into contact, then consciousness arises. And these five, six doors correspond to the six objects mentioned above. The eye door correspond to visible object and so on. Or visible object is experienced through eye door. Audible object is experienced through ear door and so on. And then there is another classification which is good to know, and that is into basis, or the material basis for the consciousness, or they are called seats of consciousness. Mostly they are sense organs. eye-based means eye sensitivity. So eye-based and eye-door are the same. Sometimes they are called eye-based, sometimes they are called eye-door, but they are the same. And ear-based means ear sensitivity, nose-based, nose sensitivity, tongue-based, tongue sensitivity, and body-based, body sensitivity. And the sixth is the heart-based. We studied about heart-based in our last lecture. So heart-based is something that depends on the blood in the heart. And we need to understand the basis also, because when we study the thought processes, we need to know which consciousness depends on which base. The seeing consciousness depends on eye base, and the other types of consciousness depend on heart base, and so on. So we have to know which base depends a certain type of consciousness. So these three we need to understand before we go to the thought processes themselves. So the objects, doors, and bases. Actually, they are the conditions for the consciousness to arise. So now we come to the thought process. There are, broadly speaking, two kinds of thought processes. One is five-door thought process. That is, thought processes which arise through five sense doors, eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. And the other is mind-door thought process. Thought processes which arise through mind-door. Today we will study the five-door thought process. Actually, the first of the five-door thought process in detail, eye-door thought process. And eye-door thought process arises in our mind when we see an object, when we see a visible object. So please look at the chart, the diagram of the thought process. You are not new to thought process, right? When we study about the what consciousness? Rootless consciousness. We had occasion to be acquainted with the thought process. Do you remember the mango simile? Right. So this diagram is the same as the one given there, but it is in more detail. Now, first, let me explain to you the bhavanga, which is mind door. We can divide consciousness broadly into two kinds, active and inactive. Active consciousness and inactive consciousness. I don't want to use subconscious or unconscious for inactive, so I say inactive and active. Inactive consciousness is that type of consciousness that arises mostly when we are asleep. So when we are asleep or when we have fainted, then that type of consciousness arises continuously. And they are called inactive because they do not take the present objects as objects and act upon them. They are passive or inactive. And these moments of consciousness arise intermittently with active consciousness all through our lives. Actually, the inactive moments of inactive consciousness are like buffer between the active active consciousness, moments of active consciousness. So in our lives we have inactive conscious flow of inactive consciousness, and then active, then inactive, then active, and so on. It goes on and on like this.
When you're dreaming, actually sleep, but you're dreaming. Is that active or inactive?
Dreaming is that it is between two, because in our book it is said that you dream when you are neither really asleep nor really awake. So it is called sleeping like that of a monkey. it is believed that monkeys never sleep soundly or something like that. They are always alert. So sleeping like that of a monkey, that means you are neither really awake nor really asleep. So it may be somewhere between these two. But according to the thought processes, we have to put them in the active side of consciousness, with the dreams.
Is it possible?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Meditation is just that. Yeah, that is why yogis who have reached upper levels of vipassana do not need much sleep. They could go on for 2, 3, 4 days without sleep. That's right. The meditative mind or concentrated mind can keep them awake and keep their physical bodies in good shape. This is the power of mind over matter. And they don't feel any fatigue or sleepiness, although they don't sleep at all, maybe for 72 hours or more than that. It's amazing. So, those moments are called in Pali bhavanga. Those inactive moments are called bhavanga moments. Bhava means life, and anga means part or constituents. So constituents of life, that means if they do not arise, life would have ended. There would be no life after them, and after the others have ceased. So they are like constituents or parts of life, so they are called bhavanga. And bhavanga is translated as life continuum by many others. So we follow that, life continuum. These bhavanga moments and the active thought moments alternate all through our lives. And bhavanga moments are technically called process-free in Pali, Viti Moda, process-free. And the active moments are called process consciousness. Yes, yes. Bhavanga is inactive and process consciousness is active. The seeing and all this thought process is the active, but there are some inactive moments here. So when a visible object comes into the avenue of the eye, or we can say when the visible object strikes at the eye, it strikes at the flow of bhavanga also. So before the present visible object strikes at the door, at the base, at the eye, there is a flow of bhavanga. Now the object strikes at the eye or comes into the avenue of the eye. So when it strikes the eye, bhavanga is flowing rapidly, and so at the moment of striking, that is one moment, right? One moment. And after it is struck, it vibrates, or it is shaken. So it shakes for 2 moments. And after shaking for 2 moments, it stopped. It ceased to arise. So, after the visible object struck the eye, 3 moments of bhavanga still arise. The first is just pas bhavanga, and then there are 2 vibrating moments. But the first is called vibrating, and the second is called arrested bhavanga, or in Pali, upachita bhavanga, cut off bhavanga, bhavanga which is cut off. So there are 3 moments of bhavanga in this thought process. Now, the lifespan of matter is said to be 17 times that of a thought moment. Or matter exists for 17 thought moments. So here, the visible object arises and it stays for 17 thought moments before it disappears. So the first line reads duration of present visible object. And this begins with the number 1 cheda, right? Now, number 1, number 2, and number 3 chedas are bhavangas. The first is, which is past, after being struck, and then second is shaking or vibrating, and the third is the last of the bhavanga, the arrested bhavanga. After these 3 arises 5 sense doors, advati, and so on. Now, the object of these bhavangas is different from the object of the following chedas, because in fact bhavanga chedas are identical with the first cheda in a given life. The first cheda, which is called relinking consciousness. Actually, this relinking consciousness repeats itself again and again through life. So when it first arises, it is called relinking consciousness. When it later arises in our minds through our lives, it is called bhavanga, life continuum. And when it arises for the last time in our lives, it is called death consciousness. So in one given life, the relinking consciousness, the bhavanga consciousness, and the death consciousness are identical in content and identical in their taking objects. So the object taken by the relinking consciousness is taken by the bhavanga consciousness. They must be the same. And the objects of relinking, or the first consciousness in this life, is said to be of 3 kinds. K, KN, and GN. K means karma. So the object of relinking consciousness is sometimes karma. Karma, which renews itself at the moment of dying, or karma which is performed at the moment of dying. That karma becomes the object of death consciousness. Or it may be some things which are instrumental in the performance of that karma. That means if that karma is, say, giving, then the things given or those who accept the giving are called sign of karma. And if it is killing, then the guns and the arrow and the animals killed may be called sign of karma, while killing itself is karma. And sometimes it is gati nimeda, sign of destiny. That means the sign of the existence is going to be reborn. Some signs of the next existence. If he is going to be reborn as a human being, then he may see the inside walls of the mother's womb. And if he's going to be reborn as a celestial being, then celestial nymphs and the celestial mansions and so on. And if he's going to reborn in hell, then maybe hellfires and fearful dogs and other things. So they are called gati nibeda, sign of destiny. So the relinking consciousness takes one of these three, either karma or sign of karma or sign of destiny. And if relinking consciousness takes karma as its object, then through the whole life, the bhavangas also take that karma as object, and that consciousness also takes that karma as object in one life. So in one given life, the object of relinking consciousness, bhavanga consciousness, and death consciousness is the same, identical. So here, number one, two, and three are bhavanga consciousness. And so they do not take the present visible object, but the karma or sign of karma or sign of destiny, which was the object of the relinking consciousness in this life. Not at birth, at conception. Yeah. Right. It's a question. It is. So this is the. That's right. It was the Buddha who first saw these, saw through his supernormal power, supernormal knowledge, which he gained just before he became the Buddha, actually. The second watch of the night, during the second watch of the night, he gained the knowledge of seeing beings dying in one existence and being reborn in another. And so that comes up. His supernormal knowledge. For other beings, it may not be known. But if you can get that kind of supernormal knowledge, then you will know, because there are. It was not only the Buddha who possessed that kind of supernormal knowledge. There are other many disciples during the time of the Buddha who possessed such knowledge. Bhavanga is the relinking consciousness repeating itself in one life. Because, you know, karma is very, very powerful. And so the relinking consciousness is caused by karma, and also the bhavanga and others also caused by karma. They are resultant types of consciousness. No, I'll explain it next week. Because we are going to study that thought process next week. It's a very good question, and I always want to explain it, because right, and many people misunderstand this place, and so. It's important to understand, you know, how the next life is conditioned by something in the present life or in the past life, and how they differ from one from the other. So next week I'll explain that. So today, where are we now? So we have only gone to three moments. So after the third moment, the five sense door adverting arises. So it turns the mind or consciousness towards the present object, and it begins the active thought moments or active moments of consciousness. So it is turning to the visible present object and also turning into the active thought moments. And it is called five sense door adverting panchadwara vajana. After that, you see the object, eye consciousness. And following it, what? Receiving consciousness. So after seeing, you receive the consciousness receives it, and then investigating the object, whether it is a desirable object or undesirable object. And next one is what? Determining consciousness, number eight. So at this moment, the chaitta determines that it is a desirable object or it is an undesirable object. After determining comes seven moments of what is called javana, impulsion. Javana means running or force. So it is during these seven moments that the object is experienced, thoroughly experienced. The other thought moments experience the object, but they do not experience forcefully as do these seven moments. So they are called javana. They have force. Not because they repeat themselves for seven times, but even when they arise only once, they have this force, this power to fully enjoy or fully experience the object. In Pali, it is used, the word anubhavana is used, that means to enjoy. But when you are angry, you do not say you enjoy it. So I think experience is a better word for that. So during these seven moments, the object is fully experienced. And then two moments follow the javana moments, and they are called registering consciousness in Pali, the dharamana. They are actually aftertaste of the javana moments. And it is said in our books that they arise twice or they never arise. So they never arise once. If they arise twice. Or they will not arise at all. So, two moments of registering or dadaramana. Now we reach 17th moment. So, at the end of the 17th moment, the visible object disappears. When the visible object disappears, active thought moments also, no other active thought moments arise. So, naturally, the bhavanga follows. So there are actually many moments of bhavanga after this thought process and many moments of bhavanga before this thought process. Most of all, not most of our times, but we have bhavangas in between these active thought moments. Yeah, there are lots of bhavanga moments between these two, between two active or thought process consciousness. That's right. That's right. That's right, yes. Yeah. No. Nobody knows how many moments. But there are, you know, in a second there can be billions of thought. Bhavanga moments between these two, between two active or thought process. Consciousness.
So if I'm sitting here listening, you sitting in a chair, each perception of you sitting in a chair
is only accepted as possible, and then the period of the bond and the life.
That's right.
And so there are actually spaces between my
That's right.
Chair, even though I think I've seen you in
this. That's right, yes. Yeah.
And,
no,
and
no.
You say there's many moments of the bond, is it like 20 moments or 100?
Nobody knows how many moments, but there are, you know, in a second there can be billions of thought moments. So there can be hundreds or thousands of bhavanga moments between two thought processes. But there is a saying, I don't know how correct it is. There's a saying that for the Buddha, only two bhavangas intervene between one thought process and another. And for Sariputta, let me see, 16 thought moments, bhavanga moments intervene between one thought process and another. But for others, many, many thousands of thought moments.
So really thousands of thought moments are wasted in a sense.
That's
so
right.
So mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. So this is, we have not come to the end of seeing an object. So this is the end of one thought process. Now, in this one thought process, we have to understand what types of consciousness represent these moments of consciousness here in this process. So number 1, 2, 3 are represented by what types of consciousness? Yeah. Now, among the 89 types of consciousness, those which have the function of bhavanga are said to be 19. Two investigating consciousness accompanied by indifference. Two investigating consciousness, and then 8 beautiful resultant sense-sphere consciousness, 5 rupa-vajra form-sphere resultant form-sphere consciousness, and 4 formless resultant consciousness. So 4, 5, 8, 2, altogether 19. These 19 chetas are said to have the function of bhavanga. So number 1, 2, and 3 are represented by one of these 19 chetas. Now number 4 is represented by what? You can easily find that out. Pancha dwara vajana. It is from among the ahituka chetas, rootless chetas. So on the chart, the fourth column, the first of the fourth column. And then what? The pancha, the five sense door adverting. That is represented by, yes, the first of the fourth column. That is five sense door adverting, and the next one is mind door adverting, and the last one is smile producing consciousness. And then, receiving consciousness, 2. One from second column and one from the third column, receiving. If you look down, this is the sixth, after below the crosses, right? And then investigating consciousness by 3. One in the second column and 2 in the third column. One red and one blue. And then determining. Now, determining consciousness is represented by Manodwara Vajana, the second of the fourth column. Yes, first, second, third, fourth column. Second of the fourth column, Manodwara Vajana. Manodwara Vajana, or mind or adverting, has two functions. When it arises through five sense door, it has a function of determining. But when it arises through mind door, it has a function of mind or adverting. So the number eight, determining, is represented by Manodwara Vajana, mind or adverting. And then Javanas, J's, are represented by what? 12 Akusalas, unwholesome. And then smile producing consciousness. And then eight wholesome, beautiful wholesome sense sphere, and eight beautiful functional sense sphere, only that. Because form sphere and formless sphere do not take a visible object as object. So we have to find among the karma vajra consciousness. And then the last two, the dharamanas, registering consciousness, they are represented by two investigating consciousness accompanied by indifference, and eight sense sphere resultant. So this is only the first of a series of thought processes. When we see an object, after this thought process, we have only seen a visible object. We have not seen let us say a man. We have seen only the visible object. We need some more thought processes in order to say, I see a man, I see a rose, or whatever. So the others are given on page 2 of the notes, what it is to see an object. So when we say, I see an object, I see a man, I see a woman, I see a kettle, or whatever, it is a very complex process. So we need altogether five sets of thought processes to be able to say, I see a man, I see a woman, I see a dog, I see a cattle, or whatever. So the first one is just the one we have studied, I-door thought process, which takes the present object. After that process, there must follow another kind of thought process through mind door, and it takes the past object. Now the visible object disappears after 17 thought moments, and then the consciousness remembers that past object. So that thought process arises through mind door. So one mind door thought process must take place, not one mind door. One series of mind or thought processes. There may be hundreds of mind or thought processes. And that is called grasping the past. After grasping the past, the next one is what? Mind or thought process, which take the whole group of visible data. That means, during this thought process, our mind takes the composite image of the thing we see. The whole of the visible data we see. So it is called synthesis in Xue Zhang'an's book, the process of synthesis. First you see the different parts of the let's say we see a man. First you see the different parts of a man, different parts of the different visible data of the thing we call the man. And at this stage, we see the whole of the visible data comprising the man. But we have not come to the man yet. So until this stage, the object of these thought processes is still in the realm of ultimate truth, because visible data still. Next, mind or thought process takes the thing concept. Now we see a man. But we cannot say that we see a man, but in our mind we see the thing, the person called a man. So at this stage, the object becomes the concept, thing concept. We do not see the visible data at this moment, but the shape or the form which is visible data form. So this is a thing concept. After the thing concept, we come to naming it. Oh, this is a man. I see a man. Or the word man may come from our mouth. So the last one is the name concept. If you do not know the name of the thing you see, this thought process will not take place. Sometimes you see a thing, but you do not know the name of it. Then this last kind of type of thought process will not arise. So in order to be able to see, to say, I see a man, we need five series of thought processes, each running maybe thousands of times. And only after these five can we say, oh, I see a man. One idle thought process may repeat itself many times. Because one visible object arises and it disappears, then another visible object arises and disappears. So it may take the present visible object and the past. So the pair, the first pair may repeat many times. Right. So these thought processes must follow one after the other. Five kinds of thought processes. And it seems unbelievable that there should be so many steps to go through before we can say, I see a man, or I see a woman, or I see a desk or something. But in this computer age, I think we can at least accept it, because a computer works like the same way. It has to go through many steps, or what do you call this? Many many lines, right? To go through many lines before it can solve a problem. And sometimes there may be 100, 200, 300 lines. But when we press a button, we get the answer right away. So it is the same as this. And in one book I read years back, I found something which come close to the explanation in Abhidhamma. And it is a book about seeing without glasses. I wore glasses, so I was interested in seeing without glasses, but I didn't do the exercises. And in that book, it was written by an MD. He said, Bates? No, not Bates. The other one. It is see without glasses or something like that, but not by Bates. So he said two things which pleased me. One thing is, he said, seeing is 90% mental and only 10% physical. So in the same way, we see with our seeing consciousness, and also attention is also important in that. And the other thing is, in order to see the letter A, your eyes shift at least four times. your eyes shift and move at least four times. So that roughly corresponds to these five thought processes here. So your eyes have to move four times before you can say, I see the letter A.
Oh. You can't see unless the eyes are constant.
Mm. Yeah, that's true, because when you do a cataract, you
can I see. So. Now, I said it is almost unbelievable that so many steps have to be gone through before we can say we see a thing. But Jnanaponika wrote something about that in his book, in the Heart of Buddhist Meditation, when he wrote about bare attention, the pain, that means being mindful of the thing you experience, just the bare attention. Not putting any value or anything of your judgments. So he, the one he wrote here is very, very good here. Let me see. Hence, the attitude of bare attention will open to a man a new world. He will first find out that where he believed himself to be dealing with a unity, that is, with a single object presented by a single act of perception, there is in fact multiplicity, that is, a whole series of different physical and mental processes presented by corresponding acts of perception following each other in quick succession. So in the same way, there are so many things involved in just the act of seeing. And although we may not be able to see one by one clearly, we can at least have a glimpse of these when we practice meditation and really pay attention, the bare attention to what we experience, what we observe, or pay attention to the thing at the present moment. So they are not just theory, but can be at least glimpsed through the practice of meditation. We have only seen the object but not heard, so let us hear something. When we hear, say, a sound, a word, what will be the sequence of thought processes? We need more or less the same sequence of thought processes before we say, say it is a cow, or I hear something. Now, when you hear a single syllable word, say a man, the first process is just the same as the one we studied, the hearing thought process. And then the second is remembering the past. If the word has only one syllable, there will be no taking the whole group, because there is only one. So that will be missing. And then number four and number five will follow. But here, they are reversed. Name concept comes first when you hear something, and then thing concept. Suppose you hear the word a man. So that is the thought process, taking the present one and then remembering it, or taking the first one, and then the word man, name concept. And only after that you arrive at the thing denoted by the word man. the man himself. So here we have the last two reversed. And if it is a two-syllable word, then we will have the synthesis stage also. Say, we hear the word woman. So for wo, you have one set of present and past, and then for the sound man, another set of present and past, and then the third one taking these two together, the two sounds woman. So the more syllables there are in the word, there will be more series of thought processes involved. So you can understand how mind works fast if you consider these thought processes involved in seeing or hearing or smelling and others. Now, when we read or when we hear, when we listen, we think we understand the meaning right away. We don't have to think of the meaning of the word. Say, I see the word meditation, and you don't have to think of the meaning of the word. You understand the meaning right away. But when you first learn the word, you don't understand it. So you have to learn it, and you have to understand slowly at that time. Now, when you hear the word meditation, meditation, four syllables, then you have to go through many series of thought processes before you understand the meaning. And when you read, then you need one thought process for the letter M, and then another for letter E, and so on, and then for the whole the whole word. And so what Jnanaponika wrote was very true. What we believe to be of a single unit becomes of multiplicity. There are so many processes involved. Just as we have, there is a thought process for seeing, there is thought process for hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. And so there are, in brief, five kinds of thought processes for seeing and so on. But there can be many, many more of them depending on the object being strong or weak or very weak and so on. But we will not go into these details at least this time. Okay, now questions. Please look at this of the 28 material properties, right? So sensitive material qualities are, let me see. They are number 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And subtle material qualities are number 2, and then 14, 15, and so on.
So what most some of the most modern thinking is saying
is that the our whole perception, you know, of our world has very little to do with what's happening. It's all internally generated.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, given how they're structured, how we're wired up, the very same object in different places would be perceived totally differently. So is that in agreement with what you're teaching? Getting in the same kind of thing. They say you do need an object, you need something to trigger,
Yeah.
But the perception, the ultimate image or perception, isn't based on the object. It's based on how we're
So it doesn't quite or squarely agree with what is taught in Buddhism. Because, you know, for the eye consciousness to arise, just as we have studied, you need the eye sensitivity, which is matter, and you need the object, which is matter. So in this teaching, there is no saying that matter is more important than mind or mind is more important than matter. They are interdependent. Mind cannot arise without the physical base and without the objects. But when I say I like this, it is because Western people also accept that mind is also important in perceiving things. They don't emphasize, put emphasis on physical things alone. Because, as I said, although there is the object, although you have the eye, and although the eye and object meet each other, if you do not have attention, if you do not pay attention, you will not see. So attention is also important for the eye consciousness to arise. Sometimes you may be doing something and you don't hear the sound of the telephone, or you don't hear the sound of the clock. That means hearing consciousness did not arise in you because you don't pay attention. So attention is also an important factor for these types of consciousness to arise. Right. They may not agree on all fours, but they more or less they agree with each other.
What's a hallucination?
And there's no object. No, those are mind objects.
Oh, those are okay.
Yes.
Mind.
And when you meditate, you have a lot of mind objects. It teaches that these thought processes arise maybe the same in different people or different beings. But what makes these thought processes different for different people is the seven movements of Javana, the impulsion. Because these seven movements are the most important movements in a given thought process. Because it is during these thought moments that we acquire akusala or kusala, or we acquire karma, good or bad karma. preceding moment, during the preceding moments, there is no kusala or akusala. And following moments also does not concern with kusala or akusala. But it is during these seven moments that we have kusala or akusala, depending on whether we have what we call wise attention, whether we have good understanding of things or not. So seeing a thing, seeing a thing and the javana can be either kusala or akusala, depending on how we react to this object or how we respond to the object. We are say, however lovely an object may be, say we are taught to look at things as impermanent and so on. Then we look at the lovely thing, a beautiful thing, but we have this attitude towards it, and so we will not get attachment to it. And so we will not get akusala javana impulsion at that moment. But if we are not taught that way and we are attached to it, then we will have akusala, unwholesome javana. So although the thought processes are the same to everybody, the javana moments are different. And depending on the difference of javana moment, we will have different results, say, either good or bad.
So I've heard it said that giving is a very powerful act of generosity. But if you see something or someone that you consider very attractive and you're very attached to the result of your giving, your gift, then you can change that act from something that's positive into something that's obvious, that's negative.
That's right.
Depending on how strongly you're attached to the results.
That's right. Yeah. That is why the giving should be practiced as bodhisattvas did. So bodhisattvas give just for the sake of giving, just for the practice of giving. They don't expect any worldly results from giving or from performing other perfections or paramitas. Yeah, and also, it is said in our books that when they give whatever they have. They give all they have. And also, they are even ready to give up their lives for the sake of the happiness of other beings. So their attachment, only attachment is to Buddhahood. You know, the word bodhisattva means that. According to the definition given in our books, bodhi means Buddhahood, and satta has two meanings. One is just a being, a body being. That means a being who is going to who is fulfilling his paramis to reach Buddhahood. And the other meaning is of satta is to be attached to. So a person who is attached to Buddhahood is called a bodhisattva. So whatever meritorious deed bodhisattvas do, and when they made a wish, they say, may this help me to attain Buddhahood. And they did not pray for or they wish for worldly happiness or whatever. Yeah, it can be seen these days too.
So it's not as if it's tremendous accomplishment to be able to see that that's something for dedicated.
Right. If a person can spend, say, about 6 weeks of intensive practice, then he will be able to see many of these mentioned in the books. Yes.
On this thought process, I hear thought processes, and how will the
actual. Yes. By the practice of vipassana, we try to see the true nature of things, and that is what is the seeing things truly as they are. So when we practice vipassana meditation, we concentrate on the thing at the present moment. Whatever is at the present moment becomes the object of vipassana meditation. Although we may have chosen a certain object as our main object or a home object, so usually the breath or the movement of the abdomen, but everything that becomes prominent at the moment is the object of vipassana meditation. And the purpose of being mindful of the object at the present moment is to see its true nature. That means to see that it comes and then it disappears, to see that it is impermanent. So when we see something, really see something as impermanent, then we cannot be attached to that thing or to that person or whatever. So in order to be detached from things, we need to see the true nature of things. We need to see that they do not last long, they are going to be destroyed or something like that. So, and that is not true speculation. Through real direct seeing of things, through vipassana meditation. Because we can speculate and we can talk about things as impermanent, but to really see the impermanence is one thing, and to read and understand or to listen to talks and understand is another. So when we really see for ourselves that things change, things come and go, then we cannot, we will not be attached, or we will not want those things. Something like if you say this building is crumbling, and if you really see that this building is crumbling, then you will not want to be in this building. Say you want to get away from it as soon as possible. That is, if you really see this, it is crumbling. But if you don't see it as crumbling, then you will not want to get away. In the same way, although we are taught that things are impermanent and so on, we need to see through the meditation for ourselves that we really are impermanent, they really are just arising and disappearing. That is why we need vipassana meditation.
Something I've been struggling with for a long time is two images. One is from my old visit. Talks about the burning house, getting the person out. Wouldn't the father do anything in order to get the children out of the burning house? In other words, to lie and talk to the son or horse or whatever, just to get out of the burning house. Which for me is a responsibility the teacher has to get the students by whatever to let go of some of their attachments. And yet, there's also the image of the Buddha that attachment is like clutching and burning iron, and you don't know that it's burning your hand. And that's more the, what you said, is that if you see the flesh was burning and smell it, you would simply let go. I don't understand the interplay of those two concepts. It seems to me like the taking the time to look deeply and understand would be a much simpler process than the one of trying to force myself to let go when I don't understand exactly what it is that I'm going to go.
Yeah, that's why you have your you need to really understand, or you need to really see the nature of things. Until we really see the nature of things, we will not want to let go. It is like losing sense of direction. Sometimes we go to a strange place, and then we don't know which is east and which is west. Or sometimes we take the west to be east and east to be west. Then when you get up in the morning, you see the sun rising from the west. So you know that it must be the east, but you still think that it is west. You cannot get rid of this feeling. So it's very difficult. I have a friend who went to Rangoon, and he knew he has lost a sense of direction. But there is one road, he said. On one side of the road, and he got the wrong directions. But after crossing the road and he reached to the other side, everything was okay. So he was indignant about that. And so he went to the side where he was all right. And then keeping that vision or something in his eyes, and then he crossed the road slowly, saying north, south, north, south, north, south. But the moment he crossed over the other side, he went away.
And that was because on that other side there was he could see the sun or something?
I don't know. The notion may have deeply imprinted in his mind. So it is difficult to get rid of it, although he knew that it was wrong. So in the same way, until we can get rid of that notion, we still think that things are permanent or something like that. Although we may be saying, oh, things are not permanent and things are subject to suffering or whatever. But we need to see the real impermanence. And that is achieved only through meditation. Okay, thank you.